There we go. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Daphne, for that introduction. I was beginning to think, oh, maybe I'll just creep away. I don't need to give the talk. But here I am, and here are all of you. So, Virya, the talk's about, and I wonder how you got on with the meditation beforehand. I wonder if the little introduction I did and the preparation for meditation helped. Do you want to put your hand up a little bit or nod your head if it helped at all? Good. Okay. So it was just really to help bring us into the moment, I suppose, just help to bring us to become more aware of how we are, whether we are acting with virya, whether we have virya or not. So, well, I'm glad if that was helpful for some people. And as I said, virya is energy in pursuit of the good. When I was first thinking about this talk, I drew little diagrams to myself and I had a shape of virya running along pursuing the good. And I kind of drew out the talk, which is not how I normally do things. I haven't brought the drawings along. I've just brought the words. So energy, sometimes it's called vigour, sometimes effort, in pursuit of things that are skillful, ethical. We were talking about precepts last week. So what is going to help us towards deepening our practice, towards insight? That's virya. And virya is essential for the spiritual life. Is vital. If we didn't have some sense of virya, some sense of movement, we'd just be static, we wouldn't get anywhere. So not surprisingly, it appears in a whole lot of lists. You know how Buddhists really like lists. Well, the five spiritual faculties have virya. The seven enlightenment factors, the Bodhiyangas, virya appears. The Noble Eightfold Path, virya appears, or effort, as it's used then. And the six paramitas, which is, this talk is one of the paramitas. We're doing the six. So, without virya, without some sense of being able to move forward positively, we'd just be static and we wouldn't get anywhere. We would change, because we're changing all the time, but it wouldn't necessarily be helpful change. So, and as somebody was saying, we are energy, we use energy, but a lot of the time we don't notice it. We don't notice it often until it goes wrong, or until we feel upset or sad or tired or something. So I'm going to be talking about how we use it and when we notice it. And also how we can increase virya, how we can use our energy more purposefully. Because if we're in it for the spiritual life, we want to be able to use it more and more purposefully. So rather than just talking about virya, I thought I would use a poem, a short text, as an illustration. This is something that's very dear to my heart, this little four-line text, which I think you've all, thanks to Rosemary, got a copy of. And I thought I would use it because it just inspires me and it helps me to use my sense of energy, of vigour, positively. Helps me to move me on. So just to give you a wee bit of background about this, I put at the bottom, it's the preliminary admonition, hard to say that, from the Ratnaguna Sanchayagata, which is a Mahayana text. It's a perfection of wisdom text. Remember Dasani last week, those of you who were here were talking about Mahayana. And this is the Buddha's advice at the very beginning of it, before the text, in inverted commas, really begin. It's about how to approach the life. It's advice, or advice about how to live your life in a way. And that's how I think of it. The Buddha was addressing aspiring and actual bodhisattvas, but it's totally relevant to us too, as aspiring bodhisattvas. So I'll just read you the text. Is there anybody who hasn't got a copy that would like one? Would you? So call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and of faith. Remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal of the world, the heroic spirits intended. So just starting at the beginning, it's call forth. So this is energy that we've got already. It's not getting energy from a drink or chocolate or something. This is calling forth what we already have. That's really reassuring to me. Okay, I've got this ability. I've got this potential to develop virya further. It's there. But I need to dig deep for it. It's not just going out and doing good deeds for my own gratification. It's digging deep, actually, to let the sense of virya well up or gush forth, if you like. And sometimes that means taking risks, because it might be actually looking to see what's really there, which it might not be what I want to be there. I might find aspects of myself that I don't want to know about. So it's about letting ourselves open up, dig in the depths. And hopefully some of you found that happened a wee bit in the meditation beforehand. And it's very helpful to find, well, it's helpful, what's not quite the right word, it's very reassuring, I suppose, again, to define that sometimes when we dig, there's much more to us than we think. We find much more than we expect. I was talking to somebody today who'd been on the pilgrimage, the recent pilgrimage that Sanjay were involved with. And for her, it was actually really scary, even saying she wanted to go on that pilgrimage and organising herself and getting herself there. It really took a lot. She wanted to go, but there were so many aspects of it that were kind of, she felt, holding her back, or she was holding herself back. But she went, and my goodness, she found so much more of herself than she expected. The whole sense of positivity and well-being and movement towards a spiritual life really gushed forth. And actually, it still is from the way she was talking to me today. So you never quite know what's going to be there. I suppose also calling forth also makes me think of sometimes when we do tasks. It might be a task that we've decided to do as a group together, or it might be a task that we've set ourselves to do. But once we become wholehearted about it and just get on with it, you know, that feeling of just satisfaction and happiness and feeling that we're doing something skillful and purposeful and satisfying, yes. So call forth as much as we can of love, of respect, and of faith. And again, the as much as we can bit, I think, is interesting, because we're all different, and as much as we can is different for each of us, and it's different at different times, different situations for each of us too. And it depends a lot on our level of awareness at the time. I was thinking, if we're feeling very distressed or very heavy, then as much as we can might be less at that time. Or if there are a lot of external demands on us, then maybe it's harder for us to bring forth what's within us. I think it's also important not to be unrealistic, because sometimes people start off with a great whoosh and feel, oh yeah. But actually, what happens is they start and then they sag. Or we start and then we sag. Does that sound familiar? Probably to all of us at some time, yeah. So it's about learning to be realistic as much as we can. This is how can I best use my energy? How can I best use my sense of purpose? Being around like-minded people helps. I think I go back to remembering when we were painting the reception room a few years ago. It might even have been painted since, but I remember a whole group of us painting the reception room. And I think it was probably over one winter holiday. And just something happened while we were doing it. We were all doing different bits, and we were discussing about where there was a red bit around the edge, and somebody decided it would be better painted out and so on. But somehow there was a really strong feeling that came together. We were all painting for a purpose. We were all doing this to beautify the centre, but something was really working together with us to help us just feel a united sense of movement. So that was Virya, and I'm sure that we were helping each other feel Virya at that point, because it's what's that phrase? The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Yeah, that's what it felt like. Yes. And I suppose at Bodhicitta, that's the beginnings of it. So call forth as much as we can of love, respect, and of faith. Now, just note, it's interesting that this is calling forth emotions. It's not calling forth brute strength. It's not calling forth necessarily physical energy. It's actually calling forth the attitude, the emotional, the approach, and the way we approach situations. So Virya is very much our way of doing things, not just what we do. And we do, obviously, want to do them skillfully. Skillfully, in Buddhist terms, is skillful as opposed to unskillful. So we hopefully do them with love, with a metaful approach, also a sense of adventure. I do think a sense of adventure is important, because the spiritual life is a very big adventure, and we don't know what's going to happen next at any point. And a sense of kindly awareness too. Respect. Now that's an interesting one coming in here. That's a really crucial aspect, I think, of being able to appreciate ourselves and others and appreciate the world we live in, really. Bearing in mind the worldly winds and how they can push us around, but just being able to feel a sense of appreciation and connection with other people, respect for their being. So the third one of those, as much as we can, of love, of respect, and of faith. So, okay, what's faith? Sometimes I do wonder. Is it faith in the Dharma? Faith in the three jewels? What do I have faith in? Do I let myself be led by faith? Is being devotional showing faith? Is it helping me? Is that virya? Is that energy in pursuit of the good if I'm bowing and expressing gratitude to the Buddha? It's just an interesting thing I remembered when I was thinking about this was to do with devotion and letting go into it, just enjoying it, making the most of being devotional, if it feels that that's skillful as far as we're concerned. I remembered when I first came here, I had not long before let go of trying to be a Christian. I'd had a Christian upbringing and I had tried quite hard to be a Christian. It hadn't worked. And I came into this room and I looked at the Buddha sitting there and I thought, oh, I haven't come from one idol to another. And why is everybody bowing? I'm not going to. And it took me about a year, I think, of people saying the salutation at the beginning. And obviously I could see people were really genuine in their approach, or they appeared to be. But it took me a long time really to feel, actually, I've let go of not bowing to the altar in church. And actually, if I'm bowing here, it's something completely different. So I think calling forth as much as I can of faith, for me anyway, is about letting myself experience the devotional feeling, let myself go into it, and not letting my upbringing inhibit me. Having said that, there is room for doubt in faith. And it's definitely not blind faith I'm talking about. I'm not just kind of talking about being devotional for, oh, it's lovely to throw myself on the floor. I don't know if any of you heard on the radio a few weeks ago, a whole series of little talks by Richard Holloway. They were just 15 minutes talks, or about 6 or 7 of them. And he was talking about doubt. He was a bishop of, Episcopal bishop of Edinburgh, I think, until he retired and resigned. And he's gone through periods of great doubt. And there were really interesting little talks he was talking about. He wasn't talking about himself specifically. He was talking about doubt actually as a catalyst for opening out and developing further. And I really connected with what he was saying. He was talking about how working through doubt can help us deepen and come to a greater understanding. And sometimes with great wonder and surprise and delight at what we find when we work through that. So, yeah, faith is multifaceted, isn't it? Faith, devotion, confidence, and doubt. That's all part of the whole. So there we are. The first line, call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and of faith. If you can do that to a greater or lesser extent, that's developing virya. Just a little bit more on that. It's about fanning the flames. And again, this is something quite personal to me at the moment. I don't know if any of you have read Gist, but there's a little bit on the back about me really appreciating the music by somebody called Sir John Tavener, who is a modern composer, writes sacred music. And I realised a little while ago that I was going through a phase, not so much of doubt, but just a feeling that the rituals I was doing were not having any great meaning for me at the moment. So just sitting through a ritual wasn't necessarily, it wasn't engaging me. I wasn't using virya because I was just sitting through it, I suppose. And I realised at that point that for me at the moment, listening to some particular music, music by some composers, but particularly by him, was a way of calling forth or letting open up my sense of faith and confidence to aspire. Much more than, say, doing at times a sevenfold puja. So, listening to music, some music, not all, some music, is a way at the moment for me of using my energy purposefully and gaining momentum. That feeling of wanting, aspiring towards insight. So the next line, remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all your taints. So remove the obstructing defilements. It's kind of quite a mouthful to say that. But really it's whatever obstructs us from, or whatever obstructs the rising of insight and wisdom. So basically that's greed, hatred and delusion. Those are the root factors. And greed of wanting what is attractive to us, of pulling it towards us and feeling that it'll be okay when we get it, whether it's somebody's attention or chocolate, well, that never does it for me, but or a new dress, or going skiing, or whatever. Wanting to pull that. And then the hatreds, the ill will, are pushing away what we don't like, or putting off what we're afraid of, or what we don't want to do. That, I think that that can be one of my difficulties sometimes. Yeah, putting off. I know that I'll do that tomorrow. I'll ring up so and so tomorrow. I'll finish this tomorrow. I'll just do the crossword now or something. Which doesn't mean to say that doing the crossword at that moment might not be virya for me, but it probably won't be. So pushing these things away or holding them down, trying to vainly to satisfy ourselves, is a total waste of energy. It's not virya, we're just wasting our lives in a way. Gampopa said that laziness is being constantly active in subduing enemies and hoarding money. So if you think about it in terms of laziness is being constantly active in subduing enemies. Now those might be the internal enemies in my mind, pushing them away, the things I don't want to do, the things I hate, the things I wish I didn't need to have around me. And the hoarding money could be just bringing towards me the things I think will give me happiness, satisfaction. So interesting, he's saying that's what laziness is, and laziness in this term is definitely not virya. So we need to bring awareness and clarity to what is happening with us. And actually, if we keep bearing in mind what we're doing, attempting to remove the obstructing defilements, the balance will tip. Bhante reassures us of this, and actually I believe him, that we just need to keep going. It's a bit like a seesaw. I was thinking about seesaw. I've got grandchildren who like seesaws. I'm a bit heavy, you know, it kind of, if I sit on one end, then they pop up the other end. So I have to be a little bit careful. But the seesaw, you know, will go like this and go like that. And eventually, if one side's heavier than the other, it will gradually go that way. So if we're starting from this end and we're seeing ourselves as moving towards awakening, and we keep going, well, the seesaw gradually, if we're on the seesaw, it will gradually work for us. One of the things that the Buddha taught, one of the many things the Buddha taught, was the five hindrances. And I suspect that everybody's familiar with the hindrances. Well, not everybody's nodding, but...
All too familiar, yes.
Ill will, indecision, anxiety, sloth, desire for sense experience, the five hindrances, and you can boil an awful lot of our negative responses down to those hindrances. They limit our ability to expand. They limit our ability to grow. And they limit our ability, or they inhibit our development of metta and awareness. And they're terrible energy wasters. Often we talk about them in terms of meditation, but actually the hindrances are around all the time. So it's quite helpful to notice them. Did anybody notice the hindrances during the meditation? Any of them? Anybody not notice any hindrances during meditation? Well, sadhu if you didn't. And sadhu for admitting it if you did. So the hindrances are, as I expect you all know, the working ground of our practice, and they are very familiar to us. So, moving on, removing the obstructing defilements and clear away all our taints. Well, this is continuing with the working ground, clear away all our taints. Shantideva, who wrote the Bodhicharavatara, the Bodhisattva's Guide to Awakening, which I think is the theme for the Sangha retreat, is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you've come to all these talks on the six paramitas, which is what the Bodhicharavatara is about, you'll be six steps ahead by the time you get to Dhanakesha. Shantideva talked about the four right efforts, and as a way of working and developing or expanding our sense of virya. So virya, as we have, or as I've implied, or as you're aware of, is a sense of physical, mental, emotional energy. Skillful actions, physical. Helping others, yeah. There was a funny little thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about helping others. The image came to mind of Boy Scouts helping old ladies across the road. And having helped an old lady across the road, the Boy Scout or whoever it was, it might have been a Buddhist woman, saying, "Is there anything else I can do for you?" And the old lady said, "Yeah, take me back the other side. I want to go in the other direction." So I suppose it's really important that we make sure of the motive why we're doing something. Really, that's the digging deep. That's the letting us really see underneath, what is this skillful action? Or are we doing it because we please ourselves? And that Boy Scout, I'm sure, was wanting to do something helpful, but he'd missed out a vital point, which was actually finding out if it was going to be helpful. So that was just physical aspect. The positive attitude, the mental thinking through, making choices, clarifying purpose, and the emotional acting as if. I think Darshan has talked last week, I said something about that I'd picked up from her talk about acting as if. Okay, I'm not a bodhisattva. I probably won't be in this life. But the more I practice acting as if, I'm going in the right direction. So the underlying motivation, the underlying emotional momentum is really important, and that's part of the whole of us. So, of course, the mental, emotional, and physical aspects of us are all interlinked. We're one body. And they're not necessarily about doing. Oh, again, I was thinking about me, and I was thinking, actually, sometimes the best way for me to use virya is just by sitting still. As Darshini pointed out, I am quite energetic physically, and I like doing things, being out and about. But actually, sometimes what I need, if I dig deep, I know I need to just sit. And that helps. So that's virya for me quite often. So going on, what are these four right efforts that Shantideva talks about? And other people as well, but Shantideva I mentioned particularly. So they're very practical and they're very logical in a way. They're about eradicating unskillful states of mind, preventing unskillful states of mind that we haven't yet got, maintaining skillful states of mind that we have, and developing skillful states of mind that we haven't yet got yet. So, straightforward. So I was thinking again about, okay, eradicating unskillful states of mind, and what can that often mean? And I think for me, and I'm sure for other people, that can often mean things like just noticing if my mind is going round and round and round, perhaps ruminating, or I said this to her and so on, and oh, that wasn't any good, and oh, why did I do that, and so on. And the same old story going round and round and round in your head. Do you get that sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, one of the four right efforts is to notice it and let it go, let it eradicate it. So, preventing unskillful states of mind, I suppose. Partly is not putting ourselves in the way of that situation. I've been noticing quite a lot with the Olympics. Well, they've sort of started, haven't they? They haven't had the ceremonies to start them yet, but they've certainly started in Glasgow. But there's constant rumbling about them and blaming. Who do you blame for there being the wrong Korean flag? And whose fault was this and what was that? And I was thinking, actually, it's so easy to get into that way of thinking, oh, of course it's not done right, or, you know, well, what do you expect? You know that frame of mind? Okay. Well, we can prevent that frame of mind in ourselves, that unskillful frame of mind, quite easily by not getting into that kind of conversation with people. And if it's on the radio, just kind of turning it off or whatever. So lots of examples of that, but that's just one that came to mind for the moment. Then moving on to maintaining skillful states of mind. So what works for me? Well, I've already said that actually just sitting and letting inspiration come can work for me. I don't know if any of you have done or do that way of writing where you just have a pencil and a blank piece of paper, or you might have a bit of a sentence like "I feel that" or "today I did" or something, and the aim is to spend 10 minutes and not let your pencil come off the paper. You just keep writing and you don't read back what you write, you just keep on going until somebody, whoever's with you, or the pinger goes ping, and then you look and see what you've got there. Are people familiar with that? Yeah, okay. And are you surprised sometimes with what comes out? I mean, sometimes I'm really surprised. Goodness, I hadn't expected that. So again, that what works for me is sometimes it's just about letting the inspiration move, letting it stir, stirring it up. Just helping me be more in a skillful way of being, I suppose. And then the fourth right effort, we've had eradicating, we've had preventing unskillful ways, we've had maintaining skillful states, and whatever works for us, it can be very individually. So the fourth one is developing skillful states of mind. So that's really about, what do I want to work on? What's my next step? How can I keep going? How can I develop myself better? When I was reading round this topic, I came across a funny little story that Banti told. I can't remember which book of his it's in of his, but it's the tale of the squirrel's tail. I don't know if it's familiar for any of them, but any of you. Banti tells a story, I don't know where he got it from, I forget, of a squirrel. Somebody came across a squirrel. This is metaphorical, not literal, by the way. And the squirrel was by a river. And the squirrel was sideways onto the river, and it was dipping its tail in the river, in the water, saturating its tail, and then flipping the tail onto the dry land and shaking it off, shaking the water off. And then it was doing it again, into the water, saturate the tail, flip it over, shake the water off. And whoever was asking the squirrel, whoever saw this, said, "What are you doing?" to the squirrel. And the squirrel said, "I want to get to the other side of the river." And Banti's comment on that was, the squirrel had a lot of patience, but it just shows that we can do anything if we really want to. That we can make rivers move. We can. Anything is possible for any of us. So he was obviously very thinking, the squirrel was planning well ahead, thinking well ahead, thinking long term. So those are the four right efforts. And our aim, if we're working with them, just to remind you, is to let insight arise. Just to be aware of our movement as we go along, and just a bit opening ourselves up, using our energy as skillfully, as helpfully, as practically as possible, to move forward rather than to turn into a block of stone, get stuck. And I think it's really important to notice the moments that we do all have flashes of insight. We all do have those moments when things clear and we actually just see the world, the life, reality, whatever it is, just differently. We just have those flashes You've all, I'm sure, had flashes. Yeah? 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 Well, no need to be modest. But I'm sure even if it was a sense of, oh yeah, I really want to go to the Buddhist Centre because I feel I can open up, develop, move forward there. And when you get there, you feel a different way of being, even for a moment. But yes, we need to notice those moments and we need to let them develop us, let them open us up. It's very easy, having had maybe a moment of insight, actually to then doubt it or to rationalise it after a while. It's very easy, actually, to remember back, oh yeah, I did that. Well, what was that about? Well, was that really? Or was that me just kind of thinking, oh, that's stupid? It's very easy to do that. Don't. Just remember the experience. Just keep it as the experience. Don't let yourself rationalise it or put it in context, put it in a box. Just let it be an experience and let that help you feel open to whatever. So listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas. I love this line, actually. I suppose the first thing that comes to me is listen. That's another aspect of Virya. And actually, really, really, really listening, I think, is, very hard, I find it. It's very easy to come and go. I expect, while I've been talking here, your mind's been coming and going. You've been hearing bits of me, and then your mind has gone off of, oh, did I turn the gas off before I came out? And, or, what time's she going to finish? Or, and then your mind may have come back to what I'm saying, and then it will have gone off again. And so, and that, our minds do that, don't they? So really listening, really taking in the Dharma particularly is something to keep practicing. Scanning is another thing that we do quite a lot. And it occurred to me, I wonder how many people here who are in Mitra classes or in Wednesday classes, whether you scan beforehand what's the stuff you're doing. What am I doing this week? Oh, I'll have a quick look through it. Well, it's up to you. But actually, to really hear the Dharma, we need to really hear it and absorb it and have time to reflect on it. And that's on this line, listen to the perfect wisdom. Look, they're not even saying listen to me singing or listen to me giving you a talk. They're saying listen to the perfect wisdom. You can't have anything better. So, really being aware of listening as a big factor in Virya. And really being able to call up from our depths. And distinguish also between if we're not really listening, are we not really listening because our body is so physically uncomfortable that if we don't move, we're going to get cramp? Or are we really wanting a cup of coffee? So calling up from our depths and distinguishing between craving and a genuine need. I know if I'm listening to something, or even when I was writing this talk, I kept popping downstairs to have a drink. And I thought afterwards, I'm sure I didn't really need all those drinks. But it was my mind just not focusing for that long. So it's about listening, tuning in. In a way, it's perhaps like listening to a radio. Perhaps if you're listening to a foreign station or something, and you have to tune in really precisely, and you just get it right, and then it goes all crackly again. To tune in really, really subtly and listen for a bit, and then it goes all crackling. Have you ever tried that? It's frustrating, isn't it? But listening is really keeping coming back. It's kind of dynamic. So it's keeping coming back, keeping tuning in, keeping that subtle edge to be able to hear the program, inverted commas. So, perfect wisdom. Listening, hearing, opening to reality as best we can, as much as we're able, how things really are. And we had good, helpful description from Dasani last week. Or how things really are, or how things really might be. So, impermanent, insubstantial, and we limit ourselves through fear or anxiety. Back to those hindrances, we limit ourselves all the time from really being able to hear, really being able to hear the perfect wisdom. Somewhere I was reading, it was mentioning about how perhaps it's a bit much to be able to hear perfect wisdom. It is we can't bear too much reality at a time. But there was a suggestion, I can't remember whether it was Bhante or whoever it was, suggested we think in terms of perfecting wisdom. We're becoming more wise through deepening our understanding, and it's perfecting wisdom. We're gradually keeping going, moving on. And if that is a more helpful way of thinking of it, then please do. So listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas. The gentle Buddhas, I like that too. Listening and stretching ourselves and making an effort, but not harshly, gently, kindly. I wonder if you've ever done that little experiment with yourselves of dropping the word gentle into your meditation. Or dropping the word kindly into awareness practice. Perhaps awareness and actually just thinking or being aware with kindness. Or just putting the word gentle or kindly into whatever it is you're doing, it really makes a difference. Well, in my experience, it really makes a difference. Even if I know exactly what I'm doing and it's not something new to me, but actually just dropping those words in, something drops, something lets go, I'm not pushing any longer, I'm just taking things gently. And it doesn't mean letting myself off the hook either. In fact, sometimes it's the opposite. It's sometimes easier to kind of push a bit than to be gentle. But listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas. Great verse. Great line. And actually, when I was thinking of that, it amused me, I think, to think, having said what I said about coming out of Christianity, but I did used to like singing hymns. I don't think I ever really noticed what I was singing, I just liked the tunes. But there was one hymn that came to mind, and the end of it, it ends, and it's quite a familiar hymn, you might know it, "O still small voice of calm." I can't remember how it begins now. "Dear Lord and Father of mankind," that's it. So the rest of the words aren't appropriate, but the very end of it is about "breathe through the earthquake, wind and fire, O still small voice of calm." And that just hit me then. If you see earthquakes, winds and fire as any stress or distress or anger or getting caught up in things, all those kind of big, traumatic possibly kind of things, and then, but through that, oh still small voice of calm, the stillness and the tranquility of letting my guard down. And to me, the voice of the gentle Buddhas is actually really hearing that underlying sense of stillness and calm. It's not the earthquake or the fire, it's getting underneath the earthquake and the fire. So listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the wheel of the world. Okay, that's what bodhisattvas are about. They're there to exemplify or to teach for the welfare and the happiness of all beings. Okay, and I suppose to an extent that's what we're aiming for. Starting small, perhaps. We're all, I suggest, novice bodhisattvas. I have a friend who's not a Buddhist, but who lived in Singapore for some years and came across Buddhism then. I don't think he came across it. I don't think he was very positive about it, what his experience of it there. And he used to tease me when I used to, he lives down south, and when I used to go and see him, he used to tease me. He'd say, "Oh, here you come again. How is the budding Buddha? How's the budding Buddha?" And to begin with, I was kind of thinking, "Oh, well, I call it Buddha anyway, not Buddha." And I'm not a budding Buddha, and he's just, you're just teasing me. And actually, I could feel my, but I didn't, I let it go. But actually, I realised he was doing it in fun. He didn't really know how to approach me, so he was just kind of, it was his way in. And actually, when I thought about it afterwards, I thought, and it's, I've been to stay with him many times, and actually it comes up nearly every time when he sees me. Yes. Well, I suppose a budding Buddha, or a budding Buddha, or a budding Bodhisattva, well, kind of brought to mind that thing of but little dust with the Buddha, and the lotus blossoms coming up, you know, through the water. So that, yeah. Some people have but little dust. Well, we're the ones with but little dust. We're the ones that are putting ourselves in the place to be able to open out, to blossom. Like the flowers that the Buddha was noticing. So, I suppose we are novice bodhisattvas. We do have potential. And so, taught for the wheel of the world, that's what bodhisattvas are about. That's what we're aiming to be about. That's the way we're going. And that's where our virya is helping to take us. And we just need to let ourselves go beyond what we think we can do or how we think we can be. We're not as limited as we think we are. We can open up. And the finally, for heroic spirits intended, how about that? Yes. Spiritual life is heroic. I looked up heroic in the Oxford Dictionary just out of curiosity, and it said very brave. And I thought, actually, that's quite right. It's not easy. I think Banti at one point said the spiritual life was like hanging upside down over a void. Sometimes it definitely feels like that. But we put ourselves in that position. We put ourselves, give ourselves meaningful life, wanting to move on, wanting to open up towards insight. The aim of these, the Perfection of Wisdom text, just going back to this little verse, is to pull the carpet under our feet, pull it out from under our feet, stop us getting complacent, stop us getting fixed in our views, so that we can eventually go beyond all views. And actually, to even let ourselves do that a bit. We do need to be heroic. So I do think we're all heroic, every single one of us here, if we're aiming to become more full and brilliant. So, okay, just finally, we need virya, the oomph, the momentum. We need to listen to our inner voice and let that energy well up. Check out our motives. Hear and absorb the Dharma. And act on what the Dharma tells us as best we can. Keep making an effort, and acting from virya will help ourselves to enlightenment, well, to insight and awakening. Just once more, read you that little verse, and if it appeals to you, please take it home and put it on your shrine or somewhere, just to kind of bring to mind the oomph, the skillful oomph. Call forth as much as you can of love, of respect, and of faith. Remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas. Taught for the weal of the world, the heroic spirits intended.